Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Dude, that's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. We have a very mixed variety of great stuff to bring to you today. We have congratulations in order. First of all, to Smiley Kaufman and his LSU Tigers, College World Series champions.
Go Tigers,
yeah,
go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Warm congratulations to me. Finally on the board. One and done the season, Smiley. Never
That's
thought it was
right.
going to happen. How about it?
Better late than never, but also how the hell did that just happen?
Well, and let's start on the positive side of this, because we're going to have a Tommy Fleetwood discussion, of course. Keegan Bradley. I mean, we just heard an interview where he's asked about his Ryder Cup chances, qualifying on points. This, of course, being a signature, I mean, or elevated event where he's going to get, you know, that much more money, that much towards qualification. Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see what those standings look like. But a comeback performance here. I mean, this is for Keegan. What does this represent in terms of both this win, of course, a hometown win, hugely emotional, but also we're looking ahead a few months and he's in prime position for this team.
Well, I mean, literally the punch has dropped. So my emotions are still, yes, send Keegan Bradley out first. Send him against a best ball. Like, send him out alone. Like, he'll go win you a point. That's how I feel about Keegan Bradley being on this Ryder Cup team. And heading into the week, let's just look and see where he was at from a points perspective. Keegan was 17th in points heading into the week. Of course, if we were recording this later, we might have a little bit more data on where exactly he would be in the standings. But have to imagine that he would be in the top 12 at this point. So if he's in the top 12 of the standings, I just don't see a way this guy's not on the team. When you go back and look at, missing out on the team where he won at Travelers 2 years ago, we all expected for him to make the team. Of course, was not selected by Zach Johnson. And then let's fast forward to being on the President's Cup team, having a good week there, but also I think people kind of forget that he won last year in Denver, the BMW Championship. That's yes. That's a huge week, a big win coming down the stretch, beating Adam Scott. So that's relatively recent. You know, he's got two really big wins, being the BMW Championship and the Travelers. And then just go back and look at what he's done in these past couple major championships. He's no doubt when you throw in experience, just, of course, him being the playing captain and what that provides, he's undoubtedly a top 12 player on this team and should be on this Ryder Cup team.
We're recording this right after the last putt dropped for a number of reasons, because Smiley's headed to a little scouting trip of the eventual Ryder Cup. You're going to get a little look at this. You're headed to go play Bethpage Black, which, by the way, we got to wrap this at the end with your little score prediction, how the game's feeling. It's going to be quite a test. We we'll have a fuller picture as we kind of unpack this in the weeks to come. We also have a conversation with James Colgan of golf.com about the new commissioner, or I should say the new CEO coming into the PGA Tour, Brian Rolapp. Mm-hmm. James has done some great reporting there, has a kind of background on his experience with NFL and what he should bring, what sort of changes he should bring to the PGA Tour. And I might be suffering from heat exhaustion, Smiley. I just played 2 days of golf and 90 plus. I'm just happy. I got done today and I had to like go sit in a air conditioned room. It was pretty brutal out there. I took a cold shower.
we played Shoal yesterday, and we about lost Big James out there yesterday.
I would hate to be playing anywhere in the South, and I have to go turn around and do it again this week. That's neither here nor there.
It was hot up there at Travers this week. It was like up there in the hundreds is what I heard. Well,
they had some interesting, they had weather on Friday, a ton of wind. Of course, today was split tees threesomes for the final round because of thunderstorms this morning up there at TPC River Highlands. But, for Keegan, as the question as posed after he wins is, you said you'll take yourself on this team only if you qualify in points, which means if he's 7-12, he's not a lock to take himself unless there's some convincing from his assistant captains, players on the team. So 17th, he should move up considerably. But do you think right now in his mind, like, what would Keegan need to do in the next few months for him to be in that 7-12 range but still pick himself to be on this team? Because right now he's just said points qualification is the only way I'm going to go.
We got plenty of time, of course, until, I guess it's like late August before this team is really solidified. But it just seems like this was so almost enough to where it feels like he should be on the team to this point. Of course, he can't play poorly over the next couple months. But the way he's been playing, the way he's been trending, there's just no way that this guy's not going to be on the team at this point.
I happen to agree. I also thought you referred back to that BMW championship last year at Castle Pines and very similar audio when he's having that conversation on the 18th hole with Scotty Vail's caddy. Just perfect club here. Hits it tight and makes that
shot
birdie.
At 18. I mean, that little huge. Chippy, I don't know what club it was. I don't know if you quite heard it. I didn't see the graphic, but just to be able to hit that shot to a front right pin as a player, knowing how difficult that is that shot's way easier to a left pin than it is at a front right pin. Cause typically the miss would be long left or short right. And he just hit it right on the button and you could hear it right after they hit it. They were saying, be as good as you look, and hits it right below. And of course we're going to have to talk about Tommy Fleetwood, because this is how we got to this point is bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, so there was a little bit of Ryder Cup vibes in that sense today. You're watching, the captain of the team with a guy who theoretically should be on, the European team, might already be close to. Yeah. He will be. There are a lot of people that are going to talk about how Tommy Fleetwood choked this week, and how, you're almost entering a space where you're up by three shots with just a few holes left to play. And looking back, how did it all fall apart? Keegan made bogey, I believe at 14 it was, and then really kind of flipped it back around, makes birdie at 15 and then again at 18 to win this tournament. But Tommy Fleetwood, where do you go first in trying to process this? Like, we know he has all the tools necessary to win on the PGA Tour, but this is all mental at this point, correct?
It's just really hard to win. It really is hard to win, especially for a player that's been, dying to win on the PGA Tour for quite some time. It's not that he hasn't won worldwide. He has. He's had plenty of wins on the DP World Tour, but today it was gift wrap for him. It just felt like it was his day. Nobody was really putting the push on, I should say, on that front nine to where, guys were going really low. He was making early bogeys, letting everybody back in, was really struggling, keeping it inside that 3 foot range when he did hit it to that lag putt, distance in that 40 foot range. That was kind of the kryptonite, basically the what lost him the golf tournament, I feel like, because you go back early in the round where he had a lag putt at the third hole. He started out with a bogey, comes back nice with a birdie, and then the third hole hits it to that little lag putt distance and isn't able to convert, and eventually was the reason why he didn't get this thing done with the lag putt at 18, poor iron shot at 16, and then 17, just about three putted there, blown it by. So the putter's always been kind of his weak link because he's been such a good ball striker the course of his career. But with how well he played yesterday, where he hit every single fairway, and then today really kind of struggled hitting the fairways quite as much, which was a bit of a surprise. Call it a choke, call it what you want. I call it a really good golf course that provides really fun endings. I think 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 are the back nine really at the Travelers is one of the best back nines we have on the PGA Tour, and it lends itself to players chasing. If you're chasing, you can go make birdies, but it's hard when you feel like you have to make pars and you just have to get to the finish line. So yes, Tommy didn't get it done, but also you got to give it credit to Keegan for just hanging in there and making the big shots when he had to.
Yeah, I mean, there was almost a turning point of greater effect on 14 when Tommy plays first and hits it close, you know, within birdie make range. And Keegan, of course, hits his long and you know, makes bogey at 14. Tommy, we thought maybe be a two-shot swing, ends up just being one. Is it harder to shake that sort of reputation as someone who has all this game but can't win if the weakest spot in your game is the putter? Like, it feels like that's where if that's your weak link, that seems to be where the nerves would come in the most. And maybe that's why we're seeing this happen. Makes it hard to win in general, but just especially some of the pace control stuff you're talking about down the stretch. Like, well, that's got to be a lot of nerves there.
Well, my brain is still in baseball mode. And by the way, the Travelers Championship was way more stressful than watching LSU winning a national championship today, which is bizarre because most of the time my blood pressure with an LSU football or football, baseball, whatever it is, game is way up there. And the Travelers had me juiced there at the end, just with all the possibilities happening. Of course, Russell Henley chipping in, almost had a three-man playoff there. But yeah, since my baseball brain is turned on, it's like a pitcher in the ninth inning who's going out there really talented and can't find the zone, you know. And
yeah,
and you feel bad for Tommy because everybody wanted to see Tommy get it done. It's really tough too, you know. It's like an away game for Tommy, with Keegan Bradley being the one guy who's easily the pride and joy of the Northeast. He is. I've played with him there. You wouldn't believe the amount of support he's gotten. He's a winner there, knows how to win there. So that makes it even more difficult. But still, you know, to win on the PGA Tour, you gotta, you know, execute down the stretch, and Tommy wasn't able to do it. And Keegan saw, you know, walked right through the door that was opened by Tommy.
And Tommy's played in numerous Ryder Cups and played well in numerous Ryder Cups, including in Rome this last time out. What do you think Luke Donald makes of this? You know, I think Tommy, when you're partnered in a competition, it's very different from trying to win an individual stroke play golf tournament. Do you think what you see this weekend has any impact whatsoever on how that team's being evaluated? I mean, it feels like he's a lock already.
Oh, yeah, Tommy's going to be on the team. And I think it just goes back to winning is hard, and it's easier for some others. Some guys love to feel the juices coming down the stretch, and they know how to win golf tournaments. And some guys are just really, really, really good at golf, like Tommy, but is yet to figure out how to win on the PGA Tour. Sometimes it's a little bit of luck that you need to go your way. Sometimes, you know, you can go out and shoot a two over back nine at the Travelers and win. But, you know, today there were players that, you know, hit some shots down the stretch that required him to do a little bit more. And that's just understanding. And two, I mean, I think it was easier the fact that they were playing in threesomes, that you got to look at everybody in the eye. You knew exactly what was going on. It wasn't like, you know, two groups ahead, somebody storms out, like let's say Keegan was two groups ahead or something, and he does that on 18. You can understand that Tommy doesn't know what's going on, but everything is right in front of him in this golf tournament, and still was not able to execute. Just missing that birdie putt at the 14th hole, the 6-footer. That would have just given him even more of a cushion heading down a stretch that you wouldn't expect to play, you know, 16, 17, 18. I don't know what I can go and find the scoring average there today, but I guarantee you that 16 and 18 probably were playing under par, and he makes bogey at 16 and 18, and just about did it at 17 too. So, if you're the chaser, that's what you want, a guy, just kind of tightening up down the end. And that's ultimately what happened.
And do you see a place in the schedule? I mean, this would have been a huge win for Tommy rolling into, you know, the Open Championship, where a place where a lot of people I think are going to like him. Do you see a spot in the schedule where he might play, where he can pick off a win that's a little bit of a confidence booster this year?
It's hard. I guess the question I would pose back to you is, because that's hard to predict, is if it wasn't today, when's it going to be, you know?
Right. Right. And I just, you know, I feel like, again, you have been in the spot. I have not. But just thinking about what this does to your psyche, you know, you have all the tools to win, you know, and at a certain point, it was kind of like Phil with not having won a major for a long period of time. And just, you know, once you break through, then I fully expect Tommy to win eventually on the tour and then to rip off a series of wins. But you know, the longer it delays and the more you have these sort of, because Keegan had
same
to play
with,
well.
Same with Cam Young, you know, it's like that same conversation. Yeah. I think those two are kind of grouped together with God, they're too talented not to win. And it's like all that we talk about with these two guys. And it's hard to win. It is. And when it gets in your head about winning, makes it even more difficult. The fact that, you know, Tommy's in the middle of the fairway, misses the green at 18, which it was, you know, the wind was up and down, made that shot difficult to get close. But, you know, you got to get that putt inside of Keegan. You got to make, you got to make sure that Keegan is putting before you. And it's just, I don't know. It's hard to say, Charlie.
And going from there, I think, you know, that's what you can say. I mean, that was the focal point of Sunday. It was Keegan and Tommy Fleetwood. There were some interesting other items coming out of this week. I think I sent you the story on Colin Morikawa not wearing a glove while hitting long irons. Yeah, I can't imagine you've dabbled in this as someone who grew up.
Especially after playing this weekend. With how hot it was, I went through like four gloves. I can't imagine the thought of going gloveless.
Multiple gloves and also like wiping the sweat off your arms. And just it's brutal in the South. But it kind of made me start to think about notable players who have not worn a glove in their you know, career. Freddie Couples, obviously the biggest one, but he's a California guy, as is Colin.
Lucas Glover.
Lucas Glover is sort of the outlier here, someone who is from the South and is known for sweating profusely, yet does not wear a glove. I don't know how that works.
Go shake his hand and you'll feel how he's able to keep his hands. I mean, it's
big mitt.
Yes, that's right.
A little talcum powder. Well, I mean, Colin is tinkering with putters right now, obviously trying stuff in the full swing. Do you like that? Do you like seeing a little tinker from Colin right now?
It's wild. I think it was just
new
his caddy, long iron.
Should mention
it was,
as well, yeah.
Yeah, long irons. He has like a different feel when he's not wearing a glove, which I thought was super interesting because if the longer the club gets, I would think the more that you would want the glove on. So I don't know. Golfers are very peculiar when it comes to certain feels, and sometimes you can find something and hey, you just ride it until that band-aid kind of wears off and then you go to the next feel, and that's just golf in general. So but yeah, it was a good Travelers Championship, and for the most part I didn't really know how it was going to shake out. Yesterday was so weird with JT and Scotty played worst ball 12 over par yesterday. So
wow,
if you take
the worst ball was. Scotty triples the first. We saw the big helicopter from JT. I mean, crazy, right?
Quad there. Yeah, it was a really, really interesting week. Of course, Scotty finds a way to end up in the top 10. Yeah. That's just what he does. But overall, I from a rebound after the US Open, it really does fit kind of the schedule nice because I'm still juiced up in the US Open, and then you get to the Travelers with the I love the back nine there. It's easily my favorite TPC course behind Sawgrass, so a good event.
All right, well, we're going to get to our conversation with James Colgan of golf.com. We're talking about Brian Rolat, the new CEO of the PGA Tour. Smiley, you're headed off to Bethpage. How's the game feeling? Where are we at?
I'm going to go over, under. It depends on what tees I play. If I play, you know, just the Pro-Am tees, I feel pretty confident that I'll shoot in the 70s.
Okay. I like that.
Now, hopefully it's a scramble. Then all the pressure's off. We just rip driver and then we just show off our wedge game. You know,
love that for you. Hoping for a scramble. We'll you know, give us some thoughts and predictions in the comments. We'll see. We'll follow up on the back end on that. But let's get you off the airport, Smiley, and hope you enjoyed this conversation with James Colgan. Hope you enjoyed that recap of Keegan Bradley's victory at the Travelers Championship. The next portion of the show is presented by our friends at Ahead, and we are talking about trust-based relationships because it is a friend of the show, James Colgan of golf.com, who returns to get us briefed on the incoming PGA Tour CEO, Brian Rolap, and all the experience that he brings from the NFL. Ahead builds and manages digital platforms that power the most successful organizations in the world. Their consultative approach, unmatched engineering, and innovative solutions combine to accelerate the impact of technology and every client they serve. Ahead's longstanding relationships are built on outcomes and experience with both their clients and technology partners. Learn more at ahead.com. All right, we continue on this episode of The Smiley Show with a friend of the show, recurring guest, James Colgan. He is a golf.com writer. You should subscribe to his Hot Mic newsletter for all things golf media related. He wrote a story about a week ago at the time of this viewing or listening, however you're consuming this, about Brian Rolapp, the incoming PGA Tour CEO, a bombshell of sorts, just a change of direction, leadership of the PGA Tour. I want to get into that, James, but we have to start in a very different place, which is you can see Smiley up there looking up the left side of the screen. I want a score prediction. How do you think Smiley's LSU Tigers did in the College World Series tonight? And then we'll see how good your prediction was when everyone's listening to and watching this on a Monday.
All right. I'm going to say 7-6. 7-6 final. Tigers win.
Tigers win. All right, so this is – we're playing Arkansas tonight. So for all the LSU baseball fans tonight, I'm working part-time here. I got, you know, you got to pay the bills here. So we've got to get the info of this new commissioner of the PGA Tour. I mean, or I guess it's commissioner, CEO, whatever you want to call him. Whatever it is, he's the new head honcho.
Yeah. Well, and I think, of course, Smiley, you know, everyone knows that as fantastic as a broadcaster as you are, the LSU Tigers probably rank higher. That baseball program ranks a little bit higher than your love for golf.
Yes and no. Baseball is such a stressful sport to watch because, you know, you can only score when you're hitting. And it's to me, I'd rather not watch and then just kind of glance and just be like, OK, I'm not stressing about this. It's easier that way, honest.
Well, you know, James told you 7-6. So we'll see if that was right. James, so that story was, you wrote it with the headline was just basically, let's get to know Brian Rolapp. You know, not a lot of people unfamiliar with a guy who was the number two at the NFL for a number of years to Roger Goodell. And you start the story and, you know, I hate to give our mutual friend Kevin Clark too much airtime on this podcast, but I thought it was a really cool way to introduce, you know, Brian Rolapp's decision making here, where Kevin was a Wall Street Journal writer and got this opportunity to go to this upstart ringer venture, the Bill Simmons starts. And he's at, I believe it was like an NFL, some sort of owner's meeting or some meeting where Brian was, and got a piece of advice from Brian Rolapp. And I just love if you could just tell a little bit about that story, but also connect that to the decision that Brian Rolapp had to stay with a very successful and stable money-making organization and be the heir apparent in some ways to Roger Goodell, or take on this new challenge to the PGA Tour.
Absolutely. Well, first, I just want to say, Smiley and Charlie, it's an honor to be a recurring guest. Yes. This might be the first podcast I'm ever recurring guest on. So,
you know, won't be the last
first time for everything.
So. Well, you do tremendous work. So we appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you. So as far as the story with Brian goes, basically, you know, Brian is named the PGA Tour CEO on, I think it was Thursday afternoon. It was during the U.S. Open. My brain is still coming back online from that whole experience. But he gets named the CEO, and I'm immediately looking for people who know him. I'm just trying to get a sense of, like, who this guy is, what his background is. And I happen to find, like, a couple tweets from Kevin Clark, who had, as it turned out, like, interacted with Brian pretty closely, knew him really well. And so I reached out to him. We talked on the phone that night, and I learned a ton about Brian, mostly through the lens of this story that you were referencing, Charlie, where, you know, Kevin is sort of thinking about taking the ringer job. He's agonizing over the decision of leaving a legacy media company, an institution in journalism at the Wall Street Journal, in favor of this website that he said, like, didn't even exist yet, that he was, you know, going to join. And he goes and he talks to Brian about it. And Brian basically says to him, you know, in this era, any job can be the best job in the world. And what Kevin said to me is, like, that was advice that changed my life, because it really emphasized to me that I didn't have to be at the Wall Street Journal as a writer or reporter to be successful. In the internet world, like, I could survive anywhere. And I thought that was just a pretty funny, you know, parallel to what was happening in Brian's life, as he's thinking about leaving life as the number two at the NFL to become the number one at the PGA Tour. It's obviously maybe not the decision that you would think he would make, considering he, you know, is basically in line to succeed Roger Goodell as the NFL commissioner. And Roger is 66 years old. He's been at the league a very long time. There's, you know, been a lot of whispers that maybe he's nearing the end of his tenure as commissioner. So to me, Brian's decision to come to the PGA Tour represented a pretty significant leap. And I thought that that story with Kevin was just kind of the perfect way to describe it, because both of them were kind of facing that decision. And obviously it's worked out very well for Kevin. He's been, you know, tremendously successful as a reporter and as a content creator. And, you know, surely the PGA Tour is hoping that the same winds up being true for Brian.
James, who exactly was in charge of this hiring process? And was this their number one candidate? I'm sure they interviewed plenty of other candidates throughout this entire process, but it's hard to not imagine that this wasn't the clear-cut guy once maybe he was made available that he was interested.
Well, Smiley, one of the interesting things is that the search committee here involved a lot of the names that you would expect, you know, the sort of pre-existing PGA Tour establishment, but it also involved the SSG, the Tour's new investment partners, really heavily. From what I heard, like, they have taken on a considerable amount of power in the PGA Tour kind of gears of progress. And Brian's hiring is like no less a feat of anything than it is the SSG has stepped into kind of an important role. Well, from what I heard, Arthur Blank, who's one of the big investors in the SSG, also is the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, was one of the key figures in bringing Brian aboard. And to your point, I think that is like 100%. It's a coup for the PGA Tour. That's what people kept saying to me when we were talking, you know, about just Brian's hiring and what it represented. Everyone said, like, it's kind of shocking that he decided to leave the NFL, something he had flirted with for a long time. He'd gotten a few job offers to be the number one at other sports leagues in the past and had kind of passed them down to stay at the NFL. So the fact that he made this decision to leave for the PGA Tour now, it speaks both to what he views as the opportunity in the PGA Tour situation and also like what is ultimately a massive get for the PGA Tour think about kind of modernizing the business.
Do you worry at all, given what you said, you know, his position, how comfy it was? He looked like the heir apparent to Goodell. Is there any situation where if this doesn't go well at the tour in the short term, where you could see him saying, when Goodell retires, I'm going right back to take that job?
Man, that's a heady question. Probably a little bit too far above my pay grade. I mean, I think that's certainly a consideration, right? I mean, He has worked at the NFL for 22 years, I believe, 23 years before coming over to the PGA Tour. And, you know, whenever that Goodell job opens up, like, I'm sure that Brian will be part of the consideration. Everyone who I spoke to said Brian was hugely involved in the growth of the media rights business at the NFL, which if you are like a big sports business person, you know, like the NFL has made $150 billion from their TV rights over the last decade. That is something that Brian has played an instrumental role in. So any business that the NFL has had that's been successful, which has been insanely successful over the last decade, Brian has been instrumentally involved in. I think that is a concern. But yeah, I think as we kind of like look at this as golf fans and whatnot, I think it's fair to say like the bird in the hand here is a really valuable thing. And bringing
Brian into the fold, long as we can get him, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And if he, you know, there's a chance that, you know, maybe that job at the NFL doesn't come open for another 10 years. And then all of a sudden Brian's, you know, career looks different and maybe his family situation is different and he decides he wants to stay. Like these things are all fluid. And the fact that he left for this specific position to me intimates that, like, you know, he's at least planning on spending some time here because it's a considerable jump and it's a leap of faith that, frankly, he didn't have to make. He was really comfortable where he was and I'm sure he was making plenty of money.
Well, James, I apologize for Charlie. He's a North Carolina football fan and experiences a lot of heartache year after year. So he's used to losing things that he loves. So
that's right.
We have this new shiny toy and we're already worried about the transfer portal. So
hold on a sec, because you're talking about a guy who spent the majority of the last few months just sending me screenshots of various Bill Belichick stories and why the buyout drops to $1 million on June 1. I'm like, can you be happy for me? I root for LSU Tigers baseball. Just let me have something for just a little bit, just a few months.
Oh, man, I'm just being serious. Oh, man. Well, I think you just kind of touched on my next question, James, just from a media standpoint. you know, the what his strength was with the NFL was is he led the media in the NFL. Looking at Brian's resume, that's what his strength seems to be. When you think about all the distribution levels that they've had, when you look at Fox, ESPN, NBC, CBS, Amazon, Netflix, all of those different platforms that you can watch the NFL on. And now you turn the page and let's compare that to the PGA Tour a little bit. I imagine that he looks at the PGA Tour profile of just overall distribution and says, I can help this. I know this is my bread and butter and this is what I can fix in the short term.
Absolutely. I think that is 100% the way that he's looking at this. I think it's funny. Like, I had some people in the golf industry reaching out to me to be like, well, you know, what is all of this focus in your story about reach? Like, the PGA Tour has great reach. They're on national TV every week. They have two big broadcast deals that bring them to plenty of audiences. And the thing that I've said to all of them is basically like, this is not about reach in terms of the nuts and bolts of like getting a PGA Tour broadcast in front of the largest number of eyeballs. Because I agree. I think the tour does a very good job of that. I think it's reach in the more philosophical sense of like, how do you add momentum and consequence and excitement and intensity and engagement to everything that's going on in a PGA Tour broadcast? How do you make it so that tour broadcasts are must-watch television every single time that they go on air? And I think that that is something that, you know, if the PGA Tour is being very honest with itself over the last 10 or so years, I think the tour has done a great job of you know, signing, you know, big money deals, making it a ton of cash. But I don't know that they've necessarily thought about how the tour would be helping the business as far as like how they could competitively build something that would make people at home feel like if they missed a single round from a tournament that they were missing out on something big. And I think that that is what Brian really specializes in. Everybody that I spoke to talked about two things. It was his involvement with the Thursday Night Football package and basically just like how he navigated bringing football to Thursday nights. That was not a normal thing like 10 years ago. And now it's kind of like a forgettable piece of the NFL's media business.
Shoot, you can't think about the NFL without Thursday Night Football now. I can't remember the last time they didn't have it. It just seems so natural to me now.
And that's what everybody said, you know, Thursday nights were Brian's petri dish. That was what people kept saying to me, that like he was just messing with all sorts of stuff. And the benefit of that was not just that the league eventually signed a multi-billion dollar deal with Amazon, but it was that for the Saturday, Sunday, and Monday night broadcasts, when, you know, when the NFL has Saturday night broadcasts, the league had just reams upon reams of data about how their fans were watching, how they were engaging, if they were engaging on digital media versus on traditional broadcast TV, like what the best way to reach people in all of those aspects was. And then the league took that information and they used it not just to build the next, you know, round of media rights, but also to think about like, how do we build a schedule every year that puts the best games on at the best time with the best stars playing in front of the biggest possible audience in the best possible venue? And it's like, that's what the NFL does over and over and over again. And that's something that I think PGA Tour Golf has done at times, but maybe not intentionally always. And I think when you think about what Brian could bring to the table, I've heard, you know, the criticism has already circled online. He's like not much of a golf guy. Doesn't have a gin, like, you know, this whole deal. I'm like, I'm not worried about that. Like, this guy understands sports in terms of just like bringing eyeballs and attention. And like, he understands that the currency of all of this is bigger than the zero sum of how do I get NBC TV broadcast partner to pay me more money. It's about like, how do I get the people at home to feel like they need this in their lives? And I think that, you know, golf obviously has some inherent issues reaching that, like in ways that football does not. But I love that there's someone in the room who's thinking about the overall just existence of the sport through that lens.
So just taking notes over here, doesn't have a gin, so probably anti-USJ, anti-USGA, anti-rollback. So we'll just get that one on the notes. So he's not going to support the rollback based on that.
And also a good friend of Scott O'Neill's from LIV. So, you know, I'm just connecting the dots.
We got a big board of yarns and we're stringing them across the whole thing. James, I find that concept, the section of your story about reach, to be the most interesting by far. And you talked a little bit about it there, but just the idea of sacrificing upfront money in some of these deals to bring in more eyeballs, and then eventually converting those eyeballs into a greater sum of money long term than what you would have gotten upfront if you just took a cash rich deal. And you talked about that petri dish, that Thursday night football, you know, that being an experiment that really paid off, you know, in a number of different ways, not only in a big deal, but all the data they gained that, you know, provided insights to help them navigate future deals. A two-parter, and again, I hate to ask you one of these big, you know, predictor questions, right? But the first piece of my question would be, you know, what do you see as the Thursday night footballs for the PGA Tour? Where are these testing grounds that you think Brian could look into and explore? And secondarily, do you feel like he's in the position to do some of experimentation that leaves money on the table? Like, how much patience? You'd assume that SSG, because he's vetted via Arthur Blank, you know, you'd think that they'd say, okay, we'll give you some time to kind of build this thing so we can make an exponential amount of money later. But how much could he really leave on the table up front in exchange for something where he's telling guys, hey, have some patience, the money will come, it's just going to take some time to figure out how we're going to make it?
Well, I think it's an interesting thing, because I think as we think about this in terms of how Brian has done this in the past, we're thinking like, who could the PGA Tour sign a broadcast deal with for less money than they otherwise would get, but that might provide them with some interesting upside. And like, I'm sure if we talked about it, we could come up with a couple streaming properties or whatever, where there might be some opportunity there. But honestly, from the people that I spoke with, the areas that seem to be kind of the biggest focus for golf right now have little to do with like signing TV rights. It's more about how those TV rights are being managed and negotiated. And so like, why had one person bring up to me the idea of like commercialization, like the whole just onslaught of TV commercials during a lot of TV broadcasts. Like, this is obviously a problem that everybody knows needs to be fixed with professional golf. How could you do that? How could you go about fixing that? Like, I think as you look at Thursday, Friday, and Saturday broadcasts, like, that is definite areas where we could be looking into different ways of commercializing the product. I think for the most part, they'll probably leave Sundays alone just because that's successful and draws big enough audiences. And I don't think they're looking to kind of come in and shake up everything. But then the other area that I heard that people were, you know, sort of speculating could be an area for Brian to fix is the PGA Tour postseason. And what I had a few people bring up to me is the idea of,
I'm screaming from the top of my lungs. What do you got for me?
Well, this is the thing. So this, what everybody brought up to me, and I hadn't really thought about it like this, because I, you know, think about golf in kind of its own world, but everyone said to me, like, every professional sports league, when they get into the playoffs, the ratings multiply. It goes from, you know, to 2 million average people per, you know, broadcast to 10 million, to 15 million, to 20 million. And in golf, it's sometimes the opposite is true. Sometimes the tour playoff events, the FedEx Cup playoff events, are drawing less viewership than the rest of the PGA Tour season. And this is a huge area that, like, the networks and especially the business people at the PGA Tour are sort of anxious to fix. Because if you could get a PGA Tour playoff situation where suddenly 20 million people are tuning in, I mean, I know that's a big number, but like, you know, if you're getting major championship level viewership for the PGA Tour playoffs, well, you've just built something for the PGA Tour that almost brings it in line with a major championship, just in terms of commercial value. And so I think that that's an area that we could definitely see Brian do some major tweaks to, because from what I understand, there was a lot of optimism and motivation and enthusiasm behind the idea of really kind of radically revamping the PGA Tour postseason. And then it didn't get over the line when it needed to. But I don't think that we're at the point now where that is like unsustainable into the future. I think this is a pivot point for the tour where a lot of those changes that had been talked about in the past maybe could be kind of brought to life.
Taking a quick break from our conversation with James Colgan to talk to you about ShipSticks. ShipSticks get you from your front door to four easier than ever. They'll pick up your golf clubs from your home or office and deliver them on time, guaranteed to your golf destination anywhere. Maybe you're headed up to Bethpage Black, as Smiley is right now, to get some reps in prior to the Ryder Cup. In and outside the United States, no more airport headaches, no more lugging heavy bags, just easy, stress-free travel for golfers like you. The supporting benefits include white glove service, complimentary insurance, real-time tracking, door-to-door service, international shipping, and it's for any occasion. ShipSticks is perfect for buddies trips, business trips, even family vacations where managing kids, strollers, and extra luggage can ruin your vacation before it's even begun. You can enjoy 20% off your next shipment by using the promo code SMILEY. That's S-M-Y-L-I-E. Let's get you right back to our conversation with James Colgan.
Do you get much of a feel with Brian and his reunification of the pro game? You already mentioned Scott O'Neill and him are friends. You have to imagine, just with the respect that I think both of these guys have in the business world, in the media world, that they're looked upon as really good businessmen, good CEOs. And of course, Scott's managing a product that isn't necessarily loved in the game of golf. It's loved by some, but it's not loved by, for the most part, all of America here that watches the PGA Tour most every week. Do you get a sense that that reunification of the players is top of mind, or is it much more of fixing kind of what's in front of you with the things you just kind of talked about?
I absolutely get the sense that it's top of mind. I thought it was funny. A bunch of people immediately dug up that Brian and Scott O'Neill had been like tweeting at one another like a decade ago, which was just epic.
Hey, that doesn't lie. That doesn't lie.
I was just, I was saying like how funny it is to think about like, you're one of your longtime buddies and you are responsible for just hammering out the future of a sports league together. Like, it's just kind of crazy. But no, I mean, I absolutely get the sense that is a huge focus. I think that's actually probably the first focus when you think about what makes, what makes Brian an intriguing executive for the tour is his capacity to like think about golf in terms of the most excitement, every single, pulling every lever to make the most possible people watch and tune in.
Okay.
And the easiest solution to get all of that to happen is to bring the best players in the world back together again. Somehow, some way, like obviously you got to figure it out. You're not going to do it without the support of the PGA Tour. And there's lots of player power right now. So like you can't just ram it through. But I think this is a massive point for the tour business if it's going to ever really return on this investment level for the SSG. I think it's hugely important that they have the best players in the world to come back. I mean, when you think about the tour schedule every year, we think about some of these like quote unquote weaker events. It's like, well, if you threw Bryson in the mix at the Valero and he was, doing whatever it is that he does every week, like I would be compelled to watch that more than I am compelled to watch the Valero when Bryson is not in the field. And I think that when when you look at the LIV product on it, the whole, like there's not all that much for the tour to want to take with them to be kind of brutally honest. But from a player standpoint and from a star standpoint, like those 5 to 10 players who are really valuable are really valuable. Like it would help a lot to have them on your broadcast every week, or at least in the weeks that matter the most. So I think that is a huge priority right now. I think that there is a general sentiment of like, okay, like we've done this and we're not going to sign a deal that like, grants all of these guys who took $100 million free reign to do whatever the hell they want now. But I think that there's a lot of motivation now to like get this thing really moving in a way that maybe it hasn't been in the 2 years since that framework agreement was signed.
So now it is of course time to sunset Jay Monahan. We're going to come up with some sort of, tequila sunset, something, some way to send him off and good graces. And that is, he's expected to end his term at the end of 2026. How much do you think we see of Jay you know, publicly he speaks usually the tour championship with the players, things like that. And then privately, how quickly do you think we start to see Brian's fingerprints on things that Jay used to kind of run? I mean, do you think that's something, obviously there's a period of time where Brian's getting up to speed, but how quickly do you think we start seeing less of Jay making his mark and more of Brian making his?
Yeah, well, this is the answer I've told a bunch of people when they've asked me about this. Is like, this is actually pretty simple. Like, just use your head and think about this. The number two at the NFL is not leaving his job to become the number two at the PGA Tour. Like, he is not coming here to play kumbaya with Jay Monahan or anyone. And like, frankly, nor should he. He is like in the position of strength. And so I think that situation is obviously something that the tour is trying to handle carefully. And like, you know, I think I have a lot of, you know, sympathy for some of the stuff that Jay has dealt with in his term as commissioner. I mean, certainly has been dealt a bit of a wild hand. But I, you know, I think this is one of those like kind of hard realities of this world and this business is like, you know, you get paid the big bucks to do the job. And sometimes when it doesn't really work out, like, it doesn't look the prettiest when it's ending. So I think this is going to be a pretty quick turnaround. I mean, Jay has said he's going to stick around for the next 18 months. I think he would absolutely be an asset to Brian as far as just navigating the, you know, discussions and understanding the maybe golf complexities that Brian might not have a super, you know, fine grasp of. But I think pretty much from here on out, I would be surprised if it was not Brian Rolapp's show at the PGA Tour.
When I think back to the commissioners of the PGA Tour and Dean Bynum, very much a, you know, a player type of commissioner, and then Tim Finchem, like a rock solid concrete type of dude, just doesn't take any BS. And then Jay Monahan, who I think is much more of a marketer, like a almost like a tournament director type of personality, who's really great, like an awesome conversation, but maybe not built for a Saudi league trying to take your players. I mean, it's not many people are, though, which is fair to Jay in all of this, that if nothing would have ever changed, Jay would have probably been just fine as a commissioner. With all that being said, with Brian now, you know, having his opportunity to kind of, you know, what's his mandate going to be? Is he going to be somebody that's going to be pushing purses? Is he going, you know, right now there's a lot of power with the players. And when you talk about the SSG and their involvement in this hiring, it feels like maybe that power of the players have had with whether they, hey, like, I'm either going to go to LIV or if we don't push this through and no, we don't want to do this for the playoffs because we don't like match play. Does it feel like finally we're going to let the people who are really smart and understand TV and products to be able to do their job and kind of let the players just play golf?
I hope so. And I think there's a lot of optimism around this right now. I think in a lot of ways, the end of the Jay tenure kind of exacerbated the problems that had come up. And the fact that after the framework agreement, I think a lot of players felt like they could not trust the tour leadership anymore. I mean, we heard plenty of players talk about this. I think Xander Schauffele is probably the bluntest of them. But I think when that happened and there was this moment of like, oh God, like we were in the dark about this and this guy just made a decision that changed the tour forever. I think that basically from that point forward, there was no change that could happen to the PGA Tour under Jay Monahan that would not be vigorously debated among the players, whether or not they actually really wanted to be a part of that argument or not. I am hopeful that that will not continue to be the case, because you could certainly see how you know, a PGA Tour that's operating a little bit more like Congress is maybe not a good solution for the future here. But I think that there's, you know, there's reason for optimism that Brian will be given the benefit of the doubt when it comes to a lot of this stuff. I think there's some hope that, you know, from the reporting that I had sort of been through and what I've seen in the aftermath of Brian's announcement, it seems like the tour will kind of look to hire another commissioner, but maybe someone who will take on more of a player focused role. So, you know, not unlike what we saw with like Jason Gore at the USGA, sort of like, okay, you know, serving as like a player liaison. I think that that might also help to grease the skids if they decide to, you know, to take that approach as well. I think that the big question right now is, like, clearly Brian has a big vision for what the PGA Tour is going to be. And clearly the players have a lot of power to argue about that if they want to. So the question is, like, will they be able to find a middle ground that allows the tour to move forward in some really, you know, new and exciting ways? I think right now there's every reason to believe that that will happen. But of course, like, as with anything, like, it doesn't take many dissenting votes to suddenly cause some problems when it comes to this. So I would say you should be optimistic, but maybe not over eager at the present moment.
Well, the Tigers are down 1-0. It's bottom of the six. We need to get some runs on the board here.
Charlie, your TV's delayed, buddy. It's 2-1.
It's 2-1?
Good guys or bad guys?
2-1 Arkansas?
2-1 good guys.
2-1 good guys.
Catch up, Charlie. Catch up.
We'll see. We'll find out soon whether or not that score holds on Monday, whether or not James Golden comes in with a 7-6 Tigers prediction.
James, quick question. Why did it take so long? You know, like, this has been – I mean, we've been talking about this for – a year and a half about, you know, who the next person was going to be. Everybody had heard the rumors that there was going to be another guy. Why did it take so long, you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's probably a few things. I think the list of people who the tour would want to hire to do this job is probably pretty small. The list of executives who fit the bill is, like, this is a big job. There's a lot that needs to get done to fix pro golf. And especially the SSG has pumped $1.5 billion into this. Like, they're not keen to see that money be lit on fire behind someone who they don't really trust. So I think it was a little bit of that. And then I think, you know, when it comes to handling this kind of, like, hiring, there's some complicated logistics to figure out. It's, like, not just how are you going to hire the guy away? What are you going to pay him? What's the scope of his job going to look like? What's his vision for the future of the, you know, of the tour? And then also, like, how are you going to handle all of the other components of it? And so I think it was one of those things where I'm sure there were discussions with serious candidates for months preceding this. I'm certain of that, in fact. But I think that maybe the delay was more about making sure that it was the right guy at the end of the road. And it certainly seems like they've settled on that.
Well, maybe just more porta potties out at the golf course. Maybe maybe let us start drinking on happy hour. I mean, these are all things that really could start, you know, up in the ratings.
Please give me a slice of the discussions with any hard alcohol sponsors for happy hour in the future here.
Oh, man. I mean, there's still so much, James, to kind of digest with all this. I'm sure you're learning more and more as the days go by. First off, congratulations on getting this report out. I know that's not every day you get to break in a new CEO of a sports league. But when it popped up, I was like, is this AI? You know, like, is this real? So job well done on the article, man. It was a great read and really well done, especially with kind of learning about this new CEO of the PGA Tour, Brian Rolapp.
Yeah, thank you guys. I'm very grateful to my bosses too at golf.com. I feel required to shout them out here. They gave me some support here in what was amounted to a pretty big story, and I'm very grateful for that. So thanks for reading.
Subscribe to the hot mic.
So, like, when you clicked enter on posting that story, was that like a, well, here he goes. Here goes nothing.
Oh, man. You have no idea.
Belly flopping into the deep end.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I sent out – so funny story about this. I sent out the story – you know, I'd been working on it for a while, but – I sent out the story. I was literally sprinting through the airport in Pittsburgh, flying home from the U.S. Open. And I sent out, you know, the story, like, kind of went out in a rush. It was, you know, we had done all of the vetting we were going to do, but then, like, just actually physically pressing publish, it was kind of a rush to get there. And so I press publish, I send out, you know, the story onto my social media, and I'm standing next to my coworker, Claire Rogers. And she turns to me online to board this flight. We're both boarding the same flight to LaGuardia. And she goes, "Is this real?" I was like, "Yes, it is real. This has been the last, you know, 5 days of my life."
She didn't know.
Has been working on this.
You're keeping. She on knew the that DM?
I was. She knew I was working on something, but she didn't know the full scope of the, okay. of the report.
Man, I didn't know what the scoop was between colleagues. I would have thought that Claire would have known the scoop on that one.
I was going to say, that's good scoop placement. We're promoting all sorts of golf.com products right now. Were you, to extend that, were you afraid of getting scooped? Were there rumblings? Was the rush in publishing, hey, someone else maybe had the story?
No, I felt pretty good that I was the only one who had it. I'd worked very hard to sort of wrangle the information that I had gotten. And I knew that I felt very good about the information that I had. But I was definitely I think the big concern that I had is anytime you're posting like a big story like this, like as just someone who works in content, like I'm sure you guys think this way too. You're always thinking about like, how do I get this out to the largest possible audience of people? And I think in that moment, I was thinking to myself, like, I have to get this out before I board this flight, because if I don't get it out before I board the flight, it's going to be 1 p.m. when I publish the story. And then people are going to be thinking about other stuff. And like, I just want to be done with it. Like, you know, let's just get it out. So, I think it was more the sort of like self-driven desire to just make sure that the work that I put a lot of hours into is sort of consumed by the largest possible audience than it was concern about someone scooping me. But I'm sure I'll learn soon enough if someone else had that information or is chasing it. I'm sure they won't be shy about sharing that with me.
James, that was the same way I felt when we had a rain delay on Sunday at the U.S. Open, and I knew I had to get out some rain shorts content. So, you know,
I wanted to talk about this. I wanted to address this.
Let's do a rain shorts segment.
So one part of me thinks this is like absolutely visionary, and one part of me thinks this like might be the dumbest product idea ever. And I just can't decide which part. Like, I need to see them in action.
Yes.
Because I support. Like, I'm not a big pants wearer anyway. When I'm in those settings, especially in rain, like who cares about, you know, get my knee from my knee to my foot getting wet. Like I don't really care about that. So I don't know. I'm open to your innovations here, I guess. That's what I wanted to share.
Let me tell you, I came bopping in that media center just full of enthusiasm on these rain shorts. And I stood in that coffee line and introduced the concept to Kyle Porter and Sean Zach, and they threw cold water on it so fast. And I just was really kind of down in the dumps. But thankfully, the good fans of the show have supported the endeavor. Here's my pitch is that, and Smiley and I have been talking about, it's a zillion degrees here in Birmingham, Alabama, and Durham, North Carolina. There's so much humidity, but there are, of course, these summer storms that pop up, right? So you're going to go play golf because the weather's nice. You don't want to, you know, if you have rain for two or three holes, it's not going to be the end of the world, but you don't want your whole clothing, you don't want to get soaking wet, right? No. So the whole idea behind rain shorts is a little something to throw over the shorts. Make it through a couple holes, throw on a little bucket hat, a little nice little vest, keep the rain off. Then the storm passes, as it does in the southern part of the United States. Take all the stuff off, good as new. And you look at your buddy over there, looks like a wet dog. And not only that, I haven't spent the past two holes in pants, and I'm not sweating. I don't have a swamp situation going on. It makes too much sense. It's almost too revolutionary for the golf world, but I've got some people sniffing around, and I've got some companies that are interested. Everyone just stay tuned, okay? Rain shorts are going to become a thing.
All I have to say is if and when, you know, you fully IPO on this, I want you to send me a pair. I am open to trying anything you've got.
Hey, Brian Rolapp, if you're listening, rain shorts, maybe that's your Petri dish. Just consider
they've got
it.
$1.5 billion to play around with. Who knows? What's another $100 million to new shorts, you know?
It's like dropping the bucket.
I can't believe. I mean, I had rain shorts making it into this episode at plus 120. And I really was actually thinking that no chance it does. But here we are. You know where I stand on the rain shorts, James, pretty clearly as these bits are just a bit childish for me. This whole rain shorts deal.
He's lost his childish wonderment. I mean, it's really sad. He's jaded. All he cares about is dumping on UNC football. It's really, it's a sad sight to see.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I know it's, but it's 9:15 over in both where you guys are at, and I got some baseball to watch. So I appreciate you, James. You're the man. Congrats, and we'll see you soon. Well, I guess we'll see you playoffs. That hopefully have better ratings.
Sounds great. Thank you, guys.
James.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our lovely fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the...
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.